Hi, everybody. Thanks for checking in, tuning in to a new episode of the Phoenix MMA podcast. I apologize for not putting out my podcast as often or frequently as I have been. Just the baby on the way. Definitely our first baby, so first child's on the way, and we're getting close. So the due date's January 10th. So getting close to that time, so just busy, but still, and also I try not to force stuff. I have to let stuff, like good topics and stuff, something to be a good podcast. If you kind of force it out, again, this podcast is not, it's not exactly made to be like a show. Like if you watch a YouTuber where they'll have three shows a week, this is supposed to entertainment. Definitely, hopefully this is not boring to you, and there is some entertainment and it helps you out. But it's also, the biggest thing is for the students in the gym, for everybody, is this to be a learning resource to help out, and hopefully I can get some things across that I just don't have time to say in a normal Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu class, because we have to be on a structure or on a schedule. If you don't have a schedule, everything just falls apart. So, but with the schedule, sometimes you can't go in detail. But we need good topics, so we got good topic for this one. This episode is going to be the ADCC recap that happened last week. A lot of really good takeaways, a lot of good information. This one, I'm going to make this podcast. The goal of this one is to up your jiu-jitsu, your grappling IQ, your grappling Brazilian jiu-jitsu wrestling IQ. And if you ever are interested in doing a ADCC, or if you want to be a professional submission grappler. So that's, that's a combination of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and wrestling. The nice thing is when I first started training, to be a professional grappler, it's not an impossible thing. I don't like when people say things are impossible. My dad used to tell me when I was young, from a pretty young age, he told me, he's like, Corey, this is the deal. You can do whatever you want in the world. But the thing is, if you do whatever you want to do in the world, if no matter what it is, ping pong, doesn't matter, if you're the best or one of the best, you will be able to make a living doing it. So I'm not going to say it was impossible when I first started doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or wrestling before that it was impossible to make an income, because it wasn't. And even there were ways that you could scale things or leverage things so that you could make more money than the people at the time were, but it was not for a grappler, for a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu practitioner, it was not a really high income. There were a couple people with a really high income, and it's still always going to be that way. Where, I think the Pareto distribution it can be related to like Stephen King novels, the amount of books that are sold and stuff like that. So there's always going to be somebody who's like the number one on the charts for country or hip hop, or album sales. Obviously it's not album, but downloads and concert ticket sales, stuff like that. But the nice thing is that you can. You don't have to be the number one per se. You want to be working for that if you're looking to be a professional grappler. But if you're smart with, especially with ADCC, we're going to go over a couple ways that you can, this would be some things to help you make money if you want to be a professional grappler. It's not a normal career path, but it would be a way you can make money. It's a really fun job. It's not like you can actually make really good money, and if you're really good with it and you have business sense and you're savvy and you study, you can actually make a lot of money while having a really fun job. So you could still I'd say if you were really smart with it, I'd say you could still make over $100,000 a year if you're business savvy, but have a also very exciting life. So you would be competing and traveling and doing seminars, things like that. But you could definitely make a good living and enjoy what you're doing. And it also, the nice thing about it too is that it actually, if you're saying, okay, so say you're a professional grappler, you're not making as much as you do in the NFL, but let's say that you have a good year and you make $130,000. There is also the nice thing about jiu-jitsu is there is a, I wouldn't say it's a retirement plan, but there is a nice segue into retirement from competition. Like say NFL, if you played for the, any NFL team playing football, when you get done, you can coach, of course. And there's, you know, college coaching jobs. I know you make a lot of money, or, you know, NFL coaching jobs, you make a lot of money. But that's, I think the percentage of people who do that is much, much smaller. If you compete at, if you do really well at the World Championships or ADCC, you get into the high grappling scene, you opening up a gym, and then so like you would think financially, this is like more little tips. When you open up a gym, it's not just opening up a gym. You want to also you also want to make your own gear, so that's your gym also is kind of like a small clothing store. And then you know, there's other things as well. There's private lessons and supplements and your gear, your memberships. But it's again, yeah, I just haven't seen it. I haven't seen like a wide receiver open up a gym. Like, hey, if you want to, you know, I know D1 does specialized training for a lot of athletes that are wanting to play in the NFL. So we're going to go over, that'll be a one tangent we're going to go over, and then takeaways from ADCC, some good takeaways. Hopefully this helps out your jiu-jitsu, your grappling IQ, and guide you a little bit on some direction on some things that you need to look out for. And we're going to go over some illogical biases, and they're the illogical biases, they're really starting to get exposed more and more. When I first started jiu-jitsu, there were a lot of things where I was like, that's just kind of silly. That doesn't, it wasn't exactly practical and logical when you broke it down, but it was just things that had come from Brazil or Japan, or just people had just been doing. And it's kind of like one of those things, like the silly little, you know, life thing, like people think, you know, drinking. Legit people like, hey, drinking sodas, it's not bad. It's like, yeah, you know, it's terrible. Like it just is. I still on occasion will drink. I love Mountain Dew. I do, but it's very rare. And when I drink Mountain Dew, I know that it's not something that I'm. It affects my mind at least. I'm like, yeah, this is. I'm using this as like a treat, but it's not a daily thing. So there's lots of things where people just kind of follow the crowd and like, well, everybody else is doing it, I'm going to do it too. Jiu-jitsu had some of those, and those are starting to be exposed more and more as jiu-jitsu has been spread from not just being in Brazil, but the United States has a huge jiu-jitsu population, and Australia as well, and the Europeans as well, and Russians, and so more people are getting into the scene, so some of those things are getting exposed. So I'm just going to tip you off to them if you're not aware of them, and I'll tell you how it used to be. Now I can say, like, you know, back in my day when I started jiu-jitsu, this was going on, and some of these things, when you hear them, they're going to be silly to you, and they're self-evident, and you'll be like, wow, really, people thought that way? And it's like, yes, just, you know, once upon a time, doctors recommended for you to smoke cigarettes. There's some jiu-jitsu things that are kind of like that, too. Like one that would easily come to mind is the belt whipping tradition, where like when you get your belt, you crawl across the mat and you get whipped. The gauntlet or the haze, the haze, like getting actually whipped. Now most gyms still do like a shark tank round where you have a fresh person on you every minute, but that's a test of willpower and cardio and technique as well. And you're doing the sport. You're not just getting pain inflicted on you for no apparent reason and being tortured or anything like that. So it is a bit of a technical test, a cardio test, and a mental fortitude test as well. But the whipping, I think the belt whipping stuff actually might be illegal. I think that's like falls under hazing. I think that's actually against the law in the United States. But gyms were doing it for years. Gyms were doing it for years, but that is one practice we don't partake in at the gym. We don't do that. We're gonna get into that and hopefully help you out and we'll get into it. We'll see what ADCC is about. See some of the cool performances from it. This is cool. It's exciting. I'm pretty pumped up. Our podcast, we got our first sponsor. So I'm not gonna have with this service that I use Anchor to do the podcast. And Anchor gives you an option to have ads play. And what they essentially ask you to do is they give you a script and they ask you to read the ad and put it on your podcast, and they selectively put it in at random times. And you know, the script is honestly, it's just ridiculous. It's silly. It's written by the companies. I know I think I have 3 or 4 different sponsorship offers right now. I've kind of stopped. Well, I'll tell you my little, I have like filters that I go through, but one is the Black Tux. I think that's what it's called. So look, they're getting a free plug, but the script is absolutely ridiculous. It gives you a script. It's like, say this about the product, say this. Everything sounds super generic. It sounds like you're listening to a commercial. It's really annoying. Like the tone of my voice to read it would have to change. You would be able to tell that I was reading a paragraph, which would be terrible. And then it'll tell you like there are some parts that you have to say strict, and if you don't say them strict, then you don't get the monetization reward from it. And then there are some things you have to say strict, and then there are other things where it just tells you, it's like, okay, this would be a good time to insert a funny anecdote about a time where you and your friends needed a tuxedo in a short amount of time. And it's like, okay, that's a good suggestion or whatever. But then after that it says, if you don't have a story, you can borrow a story from a friend of yours, or you could. So it's like, oh, okay, you can just make stuff up. Like, what's going on? That's silly. But it is kind of funny to see those ads, and the money that they offer you is pretty good, and it's based off of listeners, so just downloads. And once you get to a certain download, you get paid that amount. And then once you get, once you keep on every it's a certain number. So every time you hit that number, you get another payout from that sponsorship. But it's just silly. Like the script is silly, and then also the products. Like I'm open to sponsorships, but I won't do a sponsorship if it doesn't somehow help with your athletic performance, or somehow like actually help with your life. I don't know. I don't want to listen to a tuxedo commercial. And they put it in randomly too. So it could be a 3-minute, 4-minute recording that they put in your podcast 3 times. Not going to do that, but I am open to, the sponsors for the podcast, as long as they're, legit stuff and, things or services that I would actually use, whether it's a supplement or clothing line or gear or a service or something like that. Or let's say even if it's like a charity, it's just like a good event, something that would be good, something that's actually quality, we'll do it. But still open to sponsorships, but I won't bother you with too many annoying ads, and I'll also try to make them as good as possible, just talking about it so it's not boring. I hate when people go into a little script mode and they read like, when you do this and this, and change the tone of their voice, and then their podcast goes back to their normal podcast once they do it. So anyway, our new sponsor is Honey Dipped Aesthetics. Okay, so it's aesthetics. So it's like eyebrows, eyelashes, waxing. If you want to get your chest waxed or something like that, or your eyebrows. How could this pertain to your life? I try to keep the podcast, try to keep personal stuff out, like relationship stuff, but it's like my relationship with my fiance, that's one of our things we actually do discuss. Like we feel like an obligation to each other to keep up with ourselves, to still look like the person that both of us fell in love with. It's just one of our personal goals. Not saying that anybody else has to do it, but it's just we discuss it and we talk about it. So we both try to do that. We know that it's important to each other. With lots of times people will think aesthetic things like, eyebrows or nose or something like that, or any of the things, the services that they provide, is purely aesthetic, which yes, it's true. You're just improving or changing the look of something, but that actually does improve something. It's why you like paintings, or like you like nice decorations in your house. And your body is your vehicle. Like you look at it in the mirror all the time, and every day you wake up. So that does affect it affects your mood and stuff like that with little ways. But also it helps with professionalism if you're in a career. Most careers, the way that you present yourself to the world does affect how people look at you and how they treat you. So that's also another benefit that would be there. And then also your own, like, how you feel about yourself. Everybody gets happy when they start really working out hard and they lose 8, 12 pounds, 20 pounds. Same thing, exact same thing. With other things, whether you go, you get your hair done in a nice place if you're a dude and you get your unibrow waxed, all that good stuff. And then I'm going to go over, so you do have a function though. There's a function that's, actually pretty good about this, or pretty cool about it is Kevin, for a while, when I first told Kevin I was getting my nose waxed, I started doing it years ago, getting my nose waxed and my eyebrows. I just wasn't doing it as regularly as I hoped to, but I was a bit like the nose. I was like, okay, yeah, like I need to get my eyebrows fixed because I don't know what to do. I just don't know what to do with them. I don't know how to do it, and I don't know what to do. But my nose has a little bit of resistance. I was like, I don't know about that. And the first time I got it done, to me, it feels like whenever I get my nose waxed, it feels like I can breathe like 5 to 10% better. And I don't think it's just a placebo effect. And the funny thing is, when you first get your nose waxed, there's some inflammation, because when you just get it pulled, there's some inflammation. But you still, even with a slight bit of inflammation, you feel like you can breathe better. But then, like 3 or 4 days later, you're much more clear. Yeah. Anyway, so there's a little performance boost there. Again, it's 5 to 10%. It's not like if you have bad cardio, all of a sudden it's going to make your cardio good. But it does make it where you can breathe either easier and more clearly, and you feel it instantly. And even when you feel it instantly, you would, if you wanted to do it, say if you were saying I wanted to get my nose done, if I wanted to get my nose done before competition so I could breathe better, I would suggest to do it 3 to 5 days between competitions. So if you're looking for something for just a performance boost, I'd highly suggest it. And that's Honey Dipped Aesthetics. They're in Providence and Mount Juliet, so they're not far away. So, you know, if you're in Hermitage or Nashville area or Lebanon or Mount Juliet, we have a lot of people around there. It's in Mount Juliet, it's in Providence. Let's get our info. Do have to read the info. I don't have it memorized. Providence, Mount Juliet. The address is 1984 Providence Parkway, Mount Juliet, Tennessee. You can schedule by calling. If you call, you want to ask for Brittany to schedule your appointment. Phone number is 615-605-4148. Again, 1984 Providence Parkway, Mount Juliet, Tennessee. And you can also go to Honey Dipped Aesthetics on Instagram, and I believe you can schedule through Instagram as well. One more last little thing to it, promo, because I'll try to do cool little things like this too with our sponsors, because they help us out, to help them out too, not just the promotions, but a bonus promotion too for anybody who actually wants to take advantage of it. You get a free Phoenix MMA t-shirt with your receipt of your service that's done at Honey Dipped Aesthetics. Now I do have to say, while supplies last, so until we're out of t-shirts, so that'd be the first group of people that get done there. Bring your receipt, and you get and you can trade your receipt from Honey Dipped Aesthetics for a free Phoenix MMA t-shirt. So, yeah, so cool stuff. All right, so now let's get into ADCC. All right, so lots of cool stuff, and we're going to get rolling. So we're going to go through some things a little bit quick. If you don't know what ADCC is at all, it's Abu Dhabi Combat Club. It was founded by a sheikh prince in Dubai. It's actually a pretty cool story if you want to look it up. But the story, just really quick little cliff notes. Sheikh goes to college in the United States, keeps his identity quiet, doesn't let people know, goes by an alias, just like a common name. Was trained in jiu-jitsu, like jiu-jitsu. I think I've actually heard before, was also a wrestler, I believe. But it just fell in love with jiu-jitsu. And if you know anything about Abu Dhabi, they have just insane amounts of money. It's absolutely insane how much money they have. Obviously, oil money. So, but the Sheik fell in love with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu from training Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and decided to create this tournament every 2 years. So it'll be 1 year's the trials, the following year's the tournament, and followed by trials tournament. So it's every 2 years. And the thing that's really cool about it, it would be like the Olympics of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. It's really the Olympics of grappling, because you can get invites to the tournament. So if you're a gold medalist in judo, you can get an invite. You're a gold medalist in freestyle Greco wrestling, you can get an invite. If you are a Jiu-Jitsu world champion, you can get an invite. So so what they're doing, it's submission grappling. It's where they combine all of the grappling martial arts, sambo as well. So it's like judo, sambo, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, sumo, and everybody goes against each other, and they compete in the rule set. It has some similarities to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu with the rule set and the scoring system, but it's not identical. And even the filter that the judges judge through is not identical. There's a good match. That would be a good example of Cyborg and Nicky Rodriguez, that if you were looking through it in a Jiu-Jitsu filter, you would probably give the decision win to Cyborg. If you're looking through the ADCC filter, you give the decision to Nicky Rodriguez. So you do want to understand that. Now, the good thing about it is the way that I actually teach jiu-jitsu falls right in line with the filter of the ADCC, and you're going to start seeing this more and more. But you do want to understand the rule set in any competition that you're doing. You also want to understand that on the IBJJF scene. You also want to understand that sub only. They are all submission grappling. They would all fall in that, but it's different. Just like freestyle and Greco are different, but they're both wrestling. So. So the Sheik spends every 2 years just does this as a tournament, spends a whole lot of money. I think the prize money might be, $250,000, but that's not everything included. I heard, a recent podcast of the promoter for this year. I think he spent $90,000 on hotel rooms, because he would just not get the hotel was $90,000, and he was saying, you know, I could just go ahead and get a 3-star hotel and, you know, get something that's, you know, not very nice, but I have to go with really, really expensive things. So if you win the qualifier and you qualify for the tournament, or you're good enough and you get invited for the tournament, they pay for your flight. They pay for your flight for the event. The event moves usually every 2 years, so it'll be in Rome or Brazil or Abu Dhabi or California. So it moves around. It's cool. So it pays for your flight, pays for your hotel, pays for your food. And there's other things too, like there's gyms for people to train, because you'll come a little bit early. So a lot of expenses. And then each division for each weight class, the payouts, for each division, for first place it's $10,000, and I had second and third place pulled up. I forgot to put that on my notes. I apologize, but first place is $10,000. Second place might be $5,000, or $3,000. Don't quote me on that. But first place is $10,000 per weight division. 66, 77, 99, and above 99, So anyway, I don't have those written down either, so I apologize if I mix some of the weight classes. There are not a ton of weight classes. There are bigger gaps and jumps between the weight classes for ADCC. It might have something to do with the financials, the fact that they're, you know, you say 99 kilograms and over, that's a really big weight class, but they're paying all the money for the tournament, so they're paying out for this. The absolute division, that's all weight classes combined. That's generally the toughest bracket to win, because it's just all weight classes, everybody's thrown in together. That one's $40,000 for first place, and again, second and third place, I didn't write down the notes on this, but the second and third place are both less obvious than the first place, but they're still a payout. Then the super fight, there's a super fight, that's a single match, and that is, that's first place is $50,000, and that super fight, the super fight, so if you win the absolute, you qualify to go against the reigning champion of the tournament. And so Atlunder Goval. So it's the reigning champion, and then whoever wins that becomes the champion, and then in 2 years they come back to defend their title. So, and it's a single match for $50,000. So it's it's a good payday. So United States, it's not bad. It's not bad payouts at all. If you're thinking, Gordon Ryan got got his weight class in absolute. So he made $50,000 in 2 days from jiu-jitsu. But it's just not, that's not the entire pay scale of everything you're going to get. But it's really for, like, if you're in Brazil and the conversion rate is 4-1 and you win $50,000, you know, it's you winning $200,000 in 2 days is a good payday. United States, it's still a good money. It's still good winnings from a tournament for competing for 2 days. Yeah, still good money. Now, obviously, everybody wants to win the absolute so that they can go against the defending champion. And then if you're the defending champions, I mean, if you just think of it, you get to go have one match for $50,000 if you win. So, so yeah, good payouts for if you're thinking about a jiu-jitsu match. You're still having a hard battle. You're still having wars. There still are injury chances, but one of the positives on it is you're, compared to an MMA fight, a lot of people that fight in the UFC also compete in ADCC. And one of those things is, again, you didn't get hit in the head at all, so you didn't take any damage to your brain. So that is one of the nice things you can think about with ADCC. But that's not the entire pay scale if you're thinking about it. So you could win your division or get second or however your payout works. Really where it breaks down is, you know, so you can open up your own gym, and then that's you running a business, so you can make money off of your ADCC performance. It's like the Olympics of jiu-jitsu. So it gives you a big enough name that you can build an entire gym, or it's definitely a really, really good base. And people that don't even win, like Eddie Bravo, just beat Hoyler Gracie, and Hoyler Gracie was a previous champion, and he, you know, that was the foundation for his entire team that he's built. People don't talk about it after that. Like, Leo Vieira beat him like by 21-0 or 23-0 or something just silly. Leo Vieira just literally tore through Eddie Bravo, just tore through him. But nobody cared about Leo Vieira tearing through him because it's Hoyler Gracie. He beat Hoyler Gracie. So, and that similar things happened this year with Lachlan Giles as well. So you have that. Then, you think about, at that point, this is all tips for if you want to be a pro grappler. You would obviously, with your social media presence, you would also want to have, gear. Let's say, even if it's a t-shirt, this is a common thing that fighters will do, but when they're going to have a fight, you have your t-shirt, then, people will buy and support. And on the local stage, you sell that t-shirt to your friends and family, stuff like that. It helps you with blood work and stuff like that. But once you get big enough and you can have your own t-shirt, thing is, if you're signed with the UFC, you're kind of jacked on that. This is a big revenue stream that you're messed up with, the UFC, with the uniform Reebok deal. But if you're thinking of yourself as almost like a musician or an independent artist, if you're doing grappling, then you can make t-shirts and joggers or gear and stuff like that. And that can be also generated from your social media account, and so again, it's in, you know, and you're making your own gear, which that's fun anyway. That's another way that you can make income, that you can leverage ADCC competition into more income, or even the same thing goes for the IBJJF World Championships. Seminars as well. If you do well at ADCC, you're probably going to negotiate $2,000 to $3,000 for a 2-hour seminar. So you're going to negotiate probably $2,000 to $3,000 for your seminar, flight included and your hotel stay included. So, let's say 2 or 3 hours, you make $2,000 to $3,000, and let's just say that you, just book, say you book, 20 seminars a year. So it's, that's combined with, as you do seminars, that's also going to promote your social media presence and all that good stuff, and your merchandise and things like this. So again, if you don't want to do jiu-jitsu this way, I'm not telling you to monetize every bit of your jiu-jitsu. This is advice for athletes that want to be professional, how you can do this. And some people just never think about it. Some people want to be professional athletes, Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioners, but they don't think of all the business aspect. So you don't have to do this, but just free tips. You have you have that, your seminars, and then also you can do digital downloads. They used to be called DVDs, but instructionals, digital downloads. And usually people sell those. This is, I think, actually huge. This will be a big tip, okay? So if you're young and you want to do be a professional grappler, big tip. And this would probably be a similar tip that people would give advice to musicians as a way to not get to not let someone else leverage your intellectual property and your skills that you've worked for, that it takes a long time for you to work for. So it's really hard to get really, really good, to be one of the best people. It's really hard. But then also, once you become really, really good, kind of like Mike Tyson, people will arrive and they will try to make money off you, and they will try to take, and you have a limited amount of time that you can, that you have peaks. So they will, you know, again, Mike Tyson, just you'll be drained by managers and different companies. But with the digital downloads, or the, you know, quote, DVDs, instructionals, you can really get this. I think this is a way that you could really, really, I don't know anybody that has done it. Well, I scratch that. I think I know one person at least that has done it themselves, and I think, and it did, and it has helped them. They're a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu practitioner. If you would produce your own, if you would just produce your own, if you, I like BJJ Fanatics. I like, they do good work and they have good instructionals. They have good stuff for sure. But if you're a young athlete and you're hearing this and, like, you know, you're still a couple years out from your prime, you know, getting to that level, if you produce your own, you can definitely produce your own instructional. If you produce your own instructional, and you just take the time to invest in the necessary equipment, and this, the thing with social media and stuff, you could do it with an apartment bedroom. You could make an apartment bedroom a studio. So if you produce your own, instructionals, you produce your own content, and then so you don't have a managing company saying, okay, so we're going to take all the time to produce it and disseminate it and edit it, and then we're going to market it, and so that means we're going to take 60% of it, and you get 40%. So anyway, it's going to be more work, but you'd have more creative control over your instructional, and in your peak earning time, you would have more. You would also be able to keep more of your own money that you're earning. It's your intellectual property skill that you had to work for. So just a tip. I think that could be really, really big. But just know, if you do that, it's going to happen more and more. But this is a common thing in music, where I think I was watching a clip the other day with Destiny's Child. This is the old group, right? But they're accepting an award, and they're talking about how broke they are. And it's just, they got bad contracts. So bad contracts are out there with jiu-jitsu. So look out for it if you get really good. So prize money, different ways. So sorry, my notes are a little bit scattered today. So we're going around with just ADCC takeaways. Probably one of the biggest stories is Lachlan Giles. And if you don't know who he is, Craig Jones, jiu-jitsu coach, Australia. So you want to definitely watch Lachlan Giles. He has a really cool story. His performance is really cool. He lost first round in his weight class. 77 kilograms. He lost first round against Lucas Lepre, and Lepre, that's a great match to watch, especially when you see how well Lachlan did in the absolute. Lachlan goes on to be capture the bronze medal. Lachlan is, let's see, he is the, I believe, the first 77 kilos competitor within that weight class to win, or sorry, to get a bronze medal, to medal on the absolute podium since 2005. And that was, before that was Marcelo Garcia. So that's significant. Really, really good for Lachlan. He got beat by Lucas Lepre in the first round, and this is where we're going to go into some of these big holes that I see. Okay, so you want to watch Lucas Lepre versus Lachlan Giles, because Lachlan Giles has very, very good leg locks. Like, he's very, very technical. He's very good. He's at the forefront. He's one of the frontiers of the leg lock game, but people don't give him a lot of credit because so many ADCCs he's been matched up against really tough people. Like, you know, he got matched up a couple years ago at first round because he's seated low, so against JT Torres, but JT Torres is tearing through everybody. But he gets knocked out early. This year he gets low in the seeding, so he gets matched up with Lucas Lepre first. Definitely watch Lucas Lepre, because Lepre does beat him, and Lachlan doesn't really get close to attacking Lepre's legs at all. A couple good takeaways from this, right? Lepre is an old-school world champion. He's an old-school competitor. Really a time from where I came from, my generation of grappling, of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, where there was really not emphasis on leg attacks at all, and even to the point where some people that were silly would downplay them and say that they weren't Jiu-Jitsu and things like this, and it's like, what are you talking about? But that's a huge thing. That used to be a thing. People would say, oh, Jiu-Jitsu, I got beat one time. My instructor, I think I was a blue, but I got ankle locked in a tournament. My instructor was upset about it. He patted me on the back and said, don't worry, it doesn't matter. It was a leg lock. It was an ankle lock. It doesn't count. I was like, well, yeah, it felt like it counted when the ref, when I lost and my ankle is sore, like, yeah. So, but that was a huge, I remember, I was like, that doesn't make sense. And then there were people like, this isn't a new thing. People like Aminari and Dean Lister and Ryan Hall, they were doing this. They were ahead of the curve. They were just ahead of the curve. The leg lock attacks is not a new thing. But the new thing is that more and more people are adopting it finally. But before, it was just, you know, Dean Lester, Ryan Hall, Aminari, everybody's like, oh, okay, those guys are just kind of like mavericks. They're their own thing. But yeah, Lachlan Giles, so he loses, and that's another thing it's going to show. And then he beats three heavyweights in the absolute division. He's severely overweight, and not only is he severely overweight, again, all this is going to be allegedly. Some people on the ADCC roster have actually tested positive for performance-enhancing drugs. So some of it is actually on the record. Like, I'd say Meow, he has tested positive. Meow's tested positive. Tanquinho won the 66 kilos division. He has tested positive in the UFC, won the USADA testing. So there are several people that have tested positive, but Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is still new to drug testing, and everybody there hasn't even been tested. But when you look at physiques, again, you can tell if you've been in the game for a long time and you have trained with steroid users, or you've competed against them, and then people who get tested positive, there are trends that you start to see and similarities. But Giles, I don't believe that Giles, you know, you could always be wrong, because there's some PEDs that do not show it, that will make you much stronger, but you don't necessarily look like you're on drugs. But I would be willing to bet Lachlan Giles, when look at him, it doesn't shine a big like warning, like, hey, I think he's on PEDs. But some of the opponents that he went against definitely will make that radar go off. Again, it's just allegedly. I'm not saying I'm not accusing anybody necessarily, but just things are curious, just, you know, some of the things and some of the weight classes, like how much muscle people have gained. It's very interesting, and you get to see their transformation and stuff. And also, just so you know, like, in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, steroid use is very common. This is like firsthand seeing an experience. It's a very common thing, and it always has been. But you gotta understand, Brazil's a little bit different. There was a time in Brazil not that long ago where to get testosterone, it was sold over the counter. You didn't have to have a prescription. So like, I'd be in a gym in Brazil, and I can remember, all the guys back in the bathroom, locker room, whatever, taking turns injecting each other with steroids. I saw it. Nobody ever asked me, hey, do you want to do it? I saw what they were doing, understood what they were doing. I'm sure if I would have asked them, then they would have said, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, you can join us. But it was a normal thing. There wasn't a crazy taboo. But again, so then also, yeah, I think these competitors are competing for $50,000 that they want to win that tournament. Also, you're going to have seminars. That might give you a bonus of $50,000, $60,000 in seminars. Whatever you make off of your instructionals as well, if you're smart, there's a high income you need to make, and whatever it is, if it's $120,000 in the United States, you got to think that's almost $500,000 in Brazil. So people are going to, it's a common thing in sports. The Olympics is the same thing. If anybody thinks the Olympics is clean, or the NFL is clean, or the NBA is clean, it's like, sorry, it's no, like the testing's actually ridiculous. The more you look into it, definitely want to watch Icarus. Definitely want to listen to the podcast with Victor Conte on Joe Rogan. And also the Nowitzki podcast as well, so that you get different things and stuff. But it's yeah, the Victor Conte podcast, he actually explains how he helped U.S. Olympians pass the drug testing. And then Icarus shows how the scientists helped the Russian team pass the testing. So it doesn't surprise me that people are doing drugs, doing steroids. It is annoying, type thing, but it adds to Lachlan. So Lachlan's he's outsized, horsepower, but also it might not even be natural outsized. So there's a big thing. So what it really shows is there's a huge technical gap. Okay. So Kanan Duarte, like, he is hot. It's his first year having his black belt, and he's been tearing through everything. He's really, really good. He beats Bushesha. Bushesha, the king of everything. He beats Bushesha, and then wins the heavyweight division. And he was a little bit undersized in the division too. And watch for Kanan. He's going to get way bigger too, I think, in the next ADCC. He might weigh 20 more pounds, but he's probably going to get bigger too. But there's a reason why he's winning the heavyweight divisions. He has a good guard. His takedowns are getting better, and his leg locks are getting better. And so some things, but you're going to see some improvements out of him. He's not close to at his peak yet, but it does highlight some of the issues with the heavyweight division and the differences with the lighter weight divisions. Okay, so there's a technical gap with the lighter weight divisions and the heavier weight divisions. This Lachlan really shows it, okay? So if you're a heavyweight, this part's really important to listen to. It could give you a good edge on heavyweight competitors, especially if you want to be professional. Sorry, if you're in those lighter weight classes, you're going to have to be good at everything. It's going to be mandatory for you to stay up to date with the meta game. It's not going to be an option. If you're a heavyweight and you get on the meta and you get ahead, it's going to be like you're 2-4 years ahead of things. And it's going to be uncomfortable. But if you go to those uncomfortable places, it's going to make competition more comfortable and better experience, because you're going to win more. And it's going to be like, if you think of like ancient military, like, you know, one army develops a new type of bow and arrow so that they can ride on the horse easier and they can shoot. And then the other army can only be on their feet, like shooting their bows, because their bows are designed different. They're the size of them, something like that. It's a huge technological, there are huge skill technological advantages that happen, and some people just avoid them or they ignore them, but just because it's not the way they've always done it. But then that's how you get outdated. That's why you have to keep up with the game. That's why you have to update. And the heavyweights are really, really usually the worst about this. Honestly, they're the worst. It's the two biggest strength and weakness, like the biggest weakness of the heavyweight division is so if you can wrestle actually really well, actually wrestle well, where you actually shoot and you attack and you move, you actually move, you have a huge advantage automatically, because most heavyweights, obviously, they're larger people. You get tired faster. It requires more oxygen to move more muscle. It is more difficult. But if you do go there, if you go to that level, like Cain Velasquez, you have crazy cardio. You have such a huge advantage. If you can really move your body, you have such a huge advantage over the division. So if you're wrestling, instead of just wrestling, just playing defense and like, all right, I'm not going to get scored on the gym, you're actually trying to score, you're going to have a huge advantage when it actually comes down to competition day. Your cardio, you're going to have a huge advantage. If you develop a really good guard, okay, most heavyweight divisions, is like my coach Robert Drysdale, when he's commentating one of the matches, he said, he's like, heavyweight divisions, usually whoever gets on top and stays on top wins. But it's like, that's so important that you need to develop a good guard, because there is a chance, and at some point you will get put on your back, and you have to have a good guard. And if it's not just a survival guard, but if your guard is actually one of your assets, you have another huge advantage. So if you have good wrestling and a good guard, you have two huge advantages over the heavyweight division. Okay. The next one is leg locks. If you have good leg locks, okay. Now, like, I'm going to tell, like, if you're at 77 kilograms, like, kilos, if you're at 77 and you're competing, you have to have good leg locks. That's par. There's no question. This is the difference between the heavyweight and 77, okay? Heavyweight, if you have really good wrestling and a good guard and good leg locks, you'll destroy it. You'll just run through the division. If you, let's say you have a good guard, like you have a guard like Michael Longhi, you have a really good guard like Michael Longhi, and you have really good leg locks, like, you know, Lachlan Giles, Eddie Cummings, and you have good wrestling like JT Torres or Gary Tonin, And I say wrestling, like, you can wrestle with a college wrestler. You can take down a college wrestler. You can actually get a takedown on a college wrestler. You can actually compete with a college wrestler. That's like your par. That's your par that's set. That's what you have to have. That doesn't guarantee that you're going to win. And you don't even have to be super offensive with your legs, but you still have to be really good. JT Torres and Lucas Lepre both are from an older generation of grapplers, but they incorporate the style and they understand leg locks. And they're so good at them. It's just not their strategy. Tank Kino, you know, same thing. He understands them. It's just not his strategy. It's not the game plan he chooses to use. The same way Gary Tonin and Hanato Kanudo are both loose, fast styles, but they don't use the exact same techniques. So you choose your own things, but you still have to understand the meta. You have to keep up to date with the game. Otherwise, you'll get passed by. But again, at 77, this is mandatory. You just have to do it. At heavyweight, you have a huge advantage. You're the exception. You're going to tear through it. And the biggest thing on heavyweights, it's such a huge advantage because you have the weight advantage, which is a real thing. Weight and horsepower are always an advantage. And the absolute is a higher payday than just the division. So it gives you a higher chance. You know, you have these skills that are huge openings in your own division. Not only that, because your weight with that combined skill set, you have a higher chance of winning the higher payday, the absolute, and then becoming, then challenging the, so your payout, if you're a heavyweight, you have a higher probability to make a higher income in the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu world. But it's really funny. It's just some ego things, and it's some blind spots, and maybe bad coaching. Coaches aren't letting their athletes know, hey, you need to work on your wrestling. Hey, you need to work on your leg locks. Hey, you need to actually work on your guard. Stop always choosing to be on top every time. Why would you go with somebody 40 pounds lighter than you and constantly start on top? Like, hey, I'll start on top this time. You're just ignoring your weak spots, and it's going to get exposed once you compete. So Lachlan, and this is just it's like who Lachlan beat. It's like it's insane. Like his first one was Kynan Duarte, the heavyweight champion, and he leg locks Kynan. And the thing is, Kynan's leg locks are not bad. He has good leg locks. He's getting better, but he didn't used to be a good leg locker. He used to, you know, not really know it. He's still really young too, but now he's getting actually pretty good leg locks. But the thing is, there's still a skill gap in the game. There's still a skill gap between Lachlan and Kynan. And Kynan, because Kynan's still working. Now, the thing is, I think what happened with Kynan a little bit is he kind of, like, when you start getting good at something, you start getting confidence. You're like, all right, I'm gonna test this out. Might not be your A game, but you're like, all right, I'm gonna test this out. And Lachlan's way smaller, so he might have thought he was safe to test it out and to use it against him. Like, okay, I'm good enough. But it's Lachlan's obviously on another level. Then you got Gaggio, also another dude, like really, really big, really strong, another heavyweight. Leg locks him as well. And then Lachlan then goes on to beat Muhammad Ali. And Muhammad Ali, I think, is like 260. And he's just a monster. Like, especially in this tournament, he's gotten bigger. This tournament, he's just a monster. But Lachlan leg locks him as well. So 77 kilograms, gets bronze medal, and he literally got matched up against all the biggest people, all the biggest, most muscular people in the competition. The heavyweight champion is like, look, just think about that. Just look, 77, the 77. He got eliminated in the first round of the 77, and then. It's not like you went into it into like a fatigue match or something. It's the first round of the absolute. He beats the heavyweight champion. He lost the first round in his division, and he beat the heavyweight champion. He submitted the heavyweight champion. There is a skill gap issue that is going on with the heavyweight division. And I'm not doing this just to try to pick on heavyweights and be mean or anything. I'm trying to say, if you want to be a pro grappler and you're in the heavyweight division, if you're there, there's a big window. Go for it. Take it. And then use the other tips I gave you. And go ahead. Take that opportunity. It's not going to be easy. It's not like the heavyweights are not good. Those guys are still really, really good. But there's some openings that are there. Another one that used to be there is not doing any no-gi training. I'm not saying that you should only do no-gi training. But I also used to have a coach that would never – he's like, if it was up to me, it would only be gi classes. But then you're going to compete in no-gi competition. That doesn't make sense. If you're wanting to be a pro grappler and you to maximize your career, you want to do gi and no-gi. Now you could choose to be a specialist in either one, but again, I'm just trying to give advice to maximize. This is ADCC little tips, but also professional jiu-jitsu practitioner tips too. And one of those the big things with leg locks, there weren't that many leg locks in this tournament because most weight classes, everybody's gotten more skillful and they're getting better. It's getting harder to catch people. A couple of years ago, a lot of people were sleeping on them, and then everybody updated it, and they've now learned it, so it's harder to catch people. But there were a whole lot of rear naked chokes. The back exposure is really, really important at ADCC. The takedowns, if you take someone down, you have to keep their back flat on the mat. If they turn to their knees, like in jiu-jitsu, turtle position, or if they turn to their knees in wrestling, referee's position, if you get to that position, then it's not a takedown. So it's kind of a funky, wonky rule. That's weird. There's no other grappling that's like that, but that's just their rule. So being able to take the back and having a good rear naked choke, really, really important. Another big highlight. But if you notice on those, one of my pars was to be able to compete, to be able to wrestle with a college wrestler. If someone's an active college wrestler, their takedowns should be more crisp than if you're doing a submission grappling tournament, because it's that's more the focus, but you should still be competitive. Just like an MMA fighter should be able to be competitive with a professional boxer. Doesn't mean that, obviously Conor McGregor's not going to beat Floyd Mayweather, but he's still competitive. He's still giving a good match, because whenever you have to specialize to squeeze out that last 10%, 20%. Focus in a single sport, and you have to eliminate your other distractions. But you should still be competitive. Let's see. Bouncing around. I've been bouncing around. I jumped off my notes, and I've just been going, bouncing around. Let's see. Oh, and if you notice another thing, I'll say, I haven't mentioned judo, okay? I've been mentioning wrestling. That is another little bias that Brazilian jiu-jitsu culture has. They used to, for years, they didn't even want to say the word wrestling. And I came from a wrestling background. I love wrestling. Wrestling helped me a lot, and they would not want to say the word wrestling. They'd say, oh yeah, you've been working, you get a double leg or something, like, oh, you've been working on your judo. I've been working on your judo. It's if you look at the stats, judo does not perform as well as a takedown skill set as wrestling. It doesn't do as well in IBJJF tournaments, gi tournaments. It doesn't do as well in no gi tournaments. It doesn't do as well in the UFC, and it doesn't do as well as ADCC. It's not that it's worthless or there's nothing at all to do with judo, but it doesn't perform as well. But there is a bias to it. Everybody knows that, like, a really good wrestler with good takedowns is a difficult opponent. Doesn't matter even if you can beat them, it's a difficult opponent. There's a reason why. The technique, it's not just the toughness, the techniques are actually skillful. It's been developed for a very long time. It's a very refined martial art and skill set. There's so much competition, like amount of actual matches in wrestling, and it's such an old sport. It's been refined really well. So saying to lean more towards the wrestling side with takedowns. You want to, use the Bruce Lee strategy. It's like, use what works, use what works. The things that aren't working very well, you just discard. It's, anyway, so. And I guess, yeah, so I would suggest, and telling you 100% the truth, I would suggest not to go the PED way. This will be my closing, because I did have a side note here, and this is said they were talking about 2005 Marcelo Garcia. In the absolute, they actually had 277 in 2005, and it was not just Marcelo Garcia, but does anybody else know the other person who medaled into 2005 that was also in the 77 division, kilo division, and that was Andre Galvão. Okay, so think about that. Andre, how much weight he's gained. I don't know how much Andre weighed, but Andre looked like he could go compete in a bodybuilding competition over the weekend. And yeah, he medaled at 77. Andre has gained so much weight. But even with that being said, I would highly suggest not to go the PED route. There are multiple reasons for it, okay? You just don't know. I have to close in this podcast pretty soon. We'll run out to our limit. But the biggest takeaways on it: first, health, actual health, your pituitary gland, your pineal gland, your entire endocrine system, your hypothalamus, hair loss, possible heart issues, blood pressure, prostate. All of those are health reasons why I'd suggest not to. But then even career reasons why I'd suggest not to. You don't know what the extent of your career is going to be, especially if you're really young. You don't know. You might want to fight in the UFC one day, and the UFC has the strictest testing. It's more strict than the Olympics, more strict than the NFL, the NBA, the MLB. The UFC is extremely strict. It's like you're on probation or you're on parole. They can show up at your house at 2 a.m., 3 a.m., draw your blood, and take your urine at any time. You have to constantly know them. There's a whereabouts program where you have to let them know if you're going to go on vacation, you're going to go to another state, another country, another city. Hey, I'm going to be here. Or, hey, I like to go fish. You have to put that on there. I like to go to this lake to go fish on occasion. You have to fill out a whereabouts form so they can come find you at any time, random time, draw your blood, and take your urine. So you're going to notice some professional grapplers and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu practitioners that are going to transition to MMA, but you're going to notice that they will go to one FC. They're going to go to Asia to go compete, and Asia is known for not testing in PEDs. They can still make a good living there. You definitely can, but the UFC is the prime. It's the big one. And not only that, the IBJJF, the International Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Federation, is leaning more towards the direction of testing for PEDs. They are now testing the black belt champions, the world champions. So we'll really see how that goes. That is the direction that the sport is going. That testing is going more, not to mention all the health issues. And again, if you ever wanted to fight in the UFC, it's a huge issue. There have been a lot of people that have fought in the UFC where they built up a really good career, whether it was in wrestling, Muay Thai, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Happens in all, PED usage is in all sports. But there's been a lot of times where people build up this really good career. One of my favorite fighters of all time, honestly. It's sad but true. It's a factor. It's a big factor. But used PEDs, built a huge name, and then went to the UFC. And the problem is it affects your performance. It really, really helps you. And not only does it affect your performance, it also really negatively affect your performance. You don't go back just to your normal level. You dip below your normal level for a certain amount of time before you recover. Your body recovers. So you go in and your representation, you're winning things with PEDs, and then when you get off, you're not even going to be back to baseline. You're going to be below baseline. So it'll make your career more difficult if that's your thought. But all those things, that's how you choose to live your life. But I hope that you enjoyed this ADCC episode of the Phoenix MMA podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. Last weekend, we also had Luis Herrera. He competed. He fought the USFL, the Pancration champion. He won the world championship in Rome in Italy last year. Luis fought against him, lost by an anaconda choke, but it was still a good fight, good performance. It's just his second fight, and it was his opponent's, I think, either 12th or 13th fight. So, lost, did not win the title, did not beat the champion, but it's his first title shot at 15 years of age, and has now already had two fights in the cage, and is, so that's good stuff going on. We got some kickboxing bouts coming up as well. And we have jiu-jitsu competitions. We also have wrestling season coming up for a lot of our youth, and we have the Nashville Open IBJJF November 9th as well. So lots of cool stuff to come. Really enjoying the training, and glad everybody is working hard in the gym, and it's finally starting to cool down too, so it's going to be nice. Fall winter weather is like my favorite time to train because there's no other distractions, and it actually feels nice to get nice and warm and get a good sweat. Then you walk outside and it's nice and cool. Cool thing. So hopefully you enjoyed this podcast, and we'll have a new one coming pretty soon. Thanks for listening.